Welcome to season two of the 43%. I'm Claudia Reuter. This show forgets about the leaning in or leaning out debate and talks to women about their path toward creating a life that includes both family and career.
Finally deciding I need to work for myself. And that's when I started the nonprofit because I was tired of having to ask permission to be a mom.
That was today's guest, Erica Peterson. Erica is a mom and is also the founder and CEO of Momskin & Co., which is an online career accelerator for moms who want to switch careers and work exclusively remotely. She's also the founder and board president for Science Tots. With a BA in animal sciences, it's no wonder that Erica's passionate about helping women get into STEM. But in our conversation, she shared her incredible journey from being an unconventional student to stepping away from a PhD program during her first pregnancy. This is a story you'll want to learn more about. You know, so can we kick off? I'd love to hear a little bit about what your day is like right now, professionally and personally.
We're a completely remote company, and I've been working from home and juggling many, many things for a very long time. So my husband just recently joined the Moms Can & Co. team full time. I'm really excited that we finally, you know, get to spend more time together. So on the day-to-day, we start off our mornings together in meetings with the team or, you know, between us. You know, as a team now, you know, get to be on the go together with my two sons. So, you know, I used to be on the go with them, you know, at the skate park, at the BMX park. They both ride BMX bikes, FYI. They're 3.5 and 7.
They're 3.5 riding bikes? That's amazing.
Yes. Just yesterday, the little one, he's been riding since he was about 10 months old. I stuck him on a Strider bike when he was about 10 months old because he was so heavy. And I would be at the BMX park or skate park, wherever my oldest was, you know, telling me we needed to go for the day. And the oldest would be, at the time he was, you know, about 4. And he would say, you know, Mom, come watch me here and come watch me in this room. And the place we go to is about 80,000 square feet. So, Mom, come here. Mom, you know, all I'd be running back and forth and carrying this really heavy, almost one-year-old. So I said, you know what? He's able to stand. I'm going to put him on this, you know, balance bike, and that should help. And it did.
So you're spending your days doing things like that, bringing the kids to parks to ride bikes, and you've started a company, obviously, that now your husband has just joined. But can you share a little bit about more about that? Like, what is this company, and why did you start it?
Yeah, so Moms Can & Co. Started out as Moms Can Code. Prior to this, I had started a nonprofit that's still operational today, and you know, doing well, but that organization, it was my first, you know, like real endeavor, like where I started a business and was out there, obviously as a nonprofit fundraising and all of that. I really dove into, you know, the educational, like the education landscape here in Western Pennsylvania. And I had this like really unique glimpse from the parenting side, also, you know, also being able to, whenever there were educational conferences or, you know, different events for educators, I would attend to see what was happening because I was, you know, doing STEM activities with little kids and I wanted to know what it is that, what, you know, what are they talking about? Like, what is computational thinking and why does my my future kindergartner need to know this? And I started learning more and more about coding and how important it was becoming. And I had coded before, but I never had that perspective. And then I'm all of a sudden I'm in classrooms and I'm hearing teachers talk about it. And I'm like, huh? For kids, you know, how do you do that? Like, what's this about? And I had been doing STEM activities that the nonprofit was focused on and is focused on children ages 8 and 8, but I had started out teaching parents of like toddlers, you know, other moms I knew how to do, you know, science activities with their kids, but I just had not like even thought about it yet. And that really influenced, you know, what it, you know, the conversations I was having with the moms, because, you know, when I was going to all the mom groups, anyone that would have me, I was talking to them about my little nonprofit and, you know, where we were going to be next and like, come see me at this, you know, outdoor event. I'm going to have a table.
And at this point, the nonprofit is all about STEM awareness for kids.
Yeah. Okay. And, but I'm talking, you know, in order for that to work, I have to talk to parents. So I'm, you know, obviously became really, really good at talking to other parents and moms and, you know, getting them out to these events. And then one day I brought up coding just in conversation and they were like, what is that? And I had realized that STEM, saying STEM and STEAM in of itself was a learning curve. And like, I had to explain that all the time. So when I brought up coding, they were like, huh, what are you talking about? You know, you and your words, you know, I'm always learning and tell us more. And they were like, that seems really hard, you know, or the other moms would be like, no, you know, I know what she's talking about. Like when you used to change your MySpace page, I'm like, yeah. Like just, that's what we were doing. We were coding. And then they'd go like, oh, I get it. You know? And I asked other moms if they wanted to get together and talk about coding, learn how to code. And I found some tech groups and I was like, are any of you moms? You know, this was totally new landscape for me. I had been in mom groups online, but I hadn't like really spoken to women in tech per se. When I was sharing in Facebook about, you know, moms can code and like, let's use hashtag moms can code. I had over 100 messages one time on Messenger, and I was like, oh, I guess I need to put this somewhere. And I literally had a nothing page. I'm pretty sure I used a MailChimp landing page because I didn't have the time at the time to like put together a website yet. And I just put moms can code and like subscribe here, and over 400 people subscribed in like 3 weeks.
I was really intrigued by what you're doing because I do see firsthand that coding is something you can do remote and so in many ways could potentially give you work-life balance that you hadn't known was possible. Yeah. So you get 400 responses and then what?
And then I had asked a friend who had worked on the nonprofit's website because I was raising money for the nonprofit. My first interview ever about Moms Can Code, I'm wearing my nonprofit's t-shirt. Like they came to my outdoor event where I had finally gotten like my huge, you know, grant from Ford. And like, I had like, you know, I was sweaty. That's my first interview ever for Moms Can Code. I'm wearing the nonprofit shirt. That's how unexpected any of this is and was. So I get the signatures and I tell her, I need a website. And I guess people want to have like meet in person. Like I was getting, you know, people were saying, what are you doing for this? Are you having a website launch party? And a co-working space said, yeah, you can have it here. And I'm like, okay, sure. So Eventbrite, we're having a launch party for our website. And people showed up over, I think 100 something people showed up. And with strollers.
People were just like, yeah, I want to learn how to code. Or were they like, I want to learn this so I can do something else in my career? Like, what was the motivation you were finding?
Yeah. So at the very beginning, I was sharing stories about women in tech and the, you know, what that meant for, you know, different founders or different employees. It was different, just sharing different profiles of people. And at that launch party, it was a mix of different people. It was women in tech who were like, yeah, I'm a mom. And I've never like talked about that part of this. You know, I've never had that conversation. I want to come and show support for this. And then we had moms who didn't code, who showed up and they were like, I want to learn more. You know, what is coding and how do I get involved? And then, you know, there were men there to support, you know, because they were, their coworkers, you know, had told them about the event, or they had employees who were moms and they wanted to learn, you know, how to support women in tech and learn, understand what they could do better. It was a really, you know, mixed audience. at the beginning it was like unique, like I'm interested in this and I don't know where this is going to go. And then I saw that over that year, a lot of the moms who were studying, whether they were self-taught or, you know, taken a course or something, were really were now ready to look for jobs. And that wasn't an expected result at the beginning. Like I said, we were sharing profiles. We were a membership community. And what we realized is, in these conversations, was that, you know, the ultimate goal was to work from home, but that wasn't so clear in the beginning. You know, they didn't know how to find a remote job. Like, they knew that they were out there and that, oh, you know, like you said, like, I can see how you can code from anywhere. Why wouldn't that be a remote position? But that they were having difficulty finding them. And it wasn't just for, you know, entry-level coding or even mid-level coding jobs. Moms out there were telling me, what do you mean there's a remote job? Is that like a scam? Like, do I have to teach someone how to speak English? You know, like, they thought, or do I have to sell something or buy something? And I was like, no, like,
there's so much of that, right? Yeah.
And so I put together a list of remote jobs and I shared it, and so many moms wrote to say thank you. And this was in and outside of the community. And then I shared another, you know, bunch the next day and the next day and the next day. So for about 6 months, I was doing daily newsletters sharing remote job positions that I was finding, because I was getting, you know, all these messages and emails saying, you know, what, I didn't know that this was out there.
You've had a pretty amazing year then.
Yeah.
So and your husband's with you now. You have two little kids who you're, you know, active with, and they're in school and sounds like preschool age. So with you and your husband, what's the dynamic now? Like, how are you kind of managing the shared company/, you know, family life?
So it used to be, my husband used to work, leave at 8 o'clock, and I would be lucky if he got home by 10 o'clock at night. So he was in the automotive industry. So, but in addition to that work, he had always, if you look at all of the volunteer work I've done, all of the, you know, building the nonprofit, building this, he's always in the photo, always been there, you know, stayed up late every night with me to work on things. You know, now that we get to work full time, I mean, this is a completely different marriage. This is a completely different, you know, life, but it's what I wanted so badly for so long. So I'm enjoying it so much because I get to, you know, work with my best friend, my husband, you know, my kids get to see their father. That's been life-changing, you know, being the one who was solely responsible, you know, 95% of the week for lunches, for what they were wearing, for the laundry, like, you know, cleaning and what's for dinner, the meal planning, like all of that stuff, you know, now it's a shared responsibility.
So you feel like at this point you're splitting, you're sharing equally the responsibilities kind of that are, you know, home oriented and kids oriented, and also what's happening in the business?
Yes, absolutely.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. For so many women that Erica works with, learning to code is amazing because it's a job you can do while working from the comfort of your own home. Having your living room as your office can be such a gift. I know, because I actually spend a number of days working from home too. But wherever I'm taking a remote meeting, whether it's my couch or a kitchen table, I still like to feel professional. Putting on Beta Brand's dress pant yoga pants is a great way to get in the work zone while at home. They're comfy enough to wear, but also totally work appropriate. And I can dress up in a flash if I need to meet someone in person. When you put on a pair of Beta Brand's dress pant yoga pants, you will look good and feel good, whether you're at the office, in the grocery store, or working from home. They're designed with thoughtful details like faux zippers, front buttons, and belt loops. They've got styles for all shapes, sizes, and tastes. Millions of women agree that these are the most comfortable pants you'll ever wear to work, and I would argue they're also simply some of the most comfortable pants I own, period. Visit betabrand.com/43% to get 20% off yours today. That's BETABRAND.com/43PERCENT to get 20% off your dress pant yoga pants today. You mentioned a lot of things that you've done in terms of the nonprofit space, but you also mentioned your background in biomedical. Can you take me back, like before you had kids, where did you start and how did you end up even getting to the nonprofit world with kids? Like where, go way back.
Okay. So let's decide how way back, but so I was, I was diagnosed with ADHD, and that is a reason for a lot of things that I'm going to mention. So I was a really high achieving like child and early in high school, but I didn't finish high school because I also grew up in New York City. So if no one's like holding your hand and walking you into the school. So
got it.
Yeah. At that age, right? Like I would think, oh, I'll stop by and get coffee or marble cake at like the Central Park. Cause like you're walking past Central Park. Who wouldn't want to stop and like, you know, take a look around? Or
yeah, why not? If no one's making you right. Walk into that.
So I would just stop and I would chill and I would just sit there. I wasn't doing anything bad, but I would walk into school late or, you know, not go back after lunch because at lunchtime you get to go out. So I didn't really do well in those later years in high school. I was a junior because my birthday is November. So I was supposed to graduate at 17. So I was 16, turning 16 junior year. And I went to the assistant principal and I told her, you know, we're both better off here. You should just sign this. Please give me permission to exit. And, it's been great, you know, and she signed it. And that was all I needed.
And so now you're 16.
Yeah.
And you're like, I have my GED. I'm good. and then what?
Like my transcript is crazy because I tried all these different things. I think I graduated with over 230 credits with Wow. Yeah, I did it all. I took acting classes. I had gotten a scholarship and then I decided not to take it because I was like, what am I going to do with like a degree in this? So I wasn't going in as a freshman in my early 20s. I was going in as a, you know, late sophomore, early junior. Loved music, loved going to concerts. And so one of the selling points for West Virginia University was their radio station. Because I was thinking, okay, I'll go there, I'll be on the radio, and then like, that'll be cool. And then I can come back home to New York and, you know. So I was in a science class, and science always grabbed my attention because I wasn't good at it. I had a TA who I still keep in touch with today, and she would destroy my biology reports. I mean, I would get like a 20. And I went up
out of 100.
Yeah, out of 100. I went up to her and I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I'm not a bad writer. Why is this report like a 20? And she was like, because you're not writing for the sciences. You're writing like it's a narrative, like it's a story. So she started like paying more attention to me and like, you know, when I was in class. And we had, it was a reproductive physiology lab. And this was like one of the early bio classes. And she was like, you know, your last paper was really good. And like, it looks like you're really enjoying this. Why don't you, you know, we have people here who research reproductive physiology. And I was like, what is that, right? She said, why don't you go talk to this professor and maybe see if, you know, there's an opening in the lab. And I didn't know that you could do that. I didn't know that that was a possibility at all, ever. I had so many questions. I like emailed. I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Like, what does this do? And what does this do? And then I went back and then I got a job like as a like a student assistant in the lab. And he said, I think, you know, we can get you a part-time student position, but like, you're going to be washing the glassware and sitting in on the lab meetings. And I was like, yeah, I'm in, you know, because it was more than what I was making at the bookshop or whatever place at the mall.
But this sounds like it was really a spark that got you excited about this subject too, right?
And it was so fascinating because I just didn't know it existed. And like, so I finally got to do that. And then in the lab, I credit all of my, like the way I am today as a business, you know, as a founder, for all the stuff I did in the lab. Like everything I did in the lab is, I am so grateful for that experience, because it was really the first time that I got to be creative but also it challenged me in so many different ways. I mean, the work ethic that I needed to be successful in that lab was something I had never experienced, but I was being challenged every step of the way. And I am so grateful for that experience.
How long were you at the lab, and did you end up getting a degree in science? Yeah. Like, what did you end up?
Yeah, so I ended up, I needed more credits than I had. So I graduated with a degree in animal science and nutrition, and I actually ended up getting into the PhD program, which was crazy for me at the time because I had just not been able to finish high school, and it took forever to get through college. So that was a really great moment. So I graduated with animal science, and then I got into the program, which people are like, that's crazy.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then sadly, didn't get too far in the program though, because in my first semester, we find out that we're having a baby, and that was frowned upon.
Wow. So you were 20 when you started. So you're in your early 20s still at this point, right?
24. I had just turned 24 when I found out I was pregnant.
Wow. And so, and then what happened next?
Yeah. So my husband has been with me since I landed in West Virginia. We've been together. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I mean, we had been living together, paying bills together. We had at this point, bought a townhouse together, super like hardworking, responsible, you know, young adults. And, so finding out that we're having a baby, that was not planned. But you know, when we looked around, you know, everything was okay. There was no, you know, like mm-hmm. we were happy. And, I knew that there would be some negative like feelings, but I didn't realize that it would mean the end of it. You know, because obviously even when I talk about it, like now, like I loved that experience. It was a really like important time in my life. I did not realize that having a child would mean that was like an end. And abruptly, and you know, the way that it did. Since I told that person, the same man who kindly let me into his lab and, you know, taught me everything, I said, I'm having a baby. And his words were, you should consider doing something else that's easier, like education.
Wow. Oh, so I mean, he was pretty direct.
Yeah.
And just said, it wasn't really something you felt. You had a real decision on. You felt like the decision was being made for you in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you know. So there weren't that many women in the department to ask advice from. Something that I think is a mistake that I did, but I didn't. You know, you don't know at the time. I had spent so much time in the lab, you know, only with other lab people and not really with the outside, like women in STEM science community, wasn't connecting with others online. I wasn't really paying attention to anything other than like how my experiment was going at the time.
Right.
And, but again, you don't know when that happened. I did not have a professional network of women, of mentors, of allies to advise me on what to do. And the people, unfortunately, that I went and spoke to, their comments were like, well, you know, do you really want to right now? Or maybe you should come back later, you know, when the baby's older. Find somebody else who might be more supportive. You can't be superwoman. Like, it was like a mixed bag of reactions. And I was sick. And so with both pregnancies, I like had a hypermesis, so vomiting all the time.
It's the worst. I had that too. It's the worst.
Yeah,
it's just, the worst. It's like the least glamorous part.
Yes. I know. I like cringe when I say it, but I'm like, no, people need to know, you know, they're not alone. It sucks. And so I, you know, for my health, and I mean, obviously I was so emotionally distraught. I mean, this person was like a father figure to me. We had just had dinner at his house like two and a half weeks prior to that. His wife and I were texting, you know, like this was not at all the reaction that I had anticipated at all.
Probably in his mind, it wasn't bad intentioned, right? Like probably in his mind, he was giving you kind advice, even though that's not what you needed or wanted, right?
And we never, I went back to a friend, it was her dissertation, and I went back to the school about, you know, when my son was probably almost 2 years old, so a while, late, almost 3 years later, and, you know, we shook hands, and but never spoke about it, never, you know, that was it. Like, that was the response to that, and it ended there.
And when you left right after you found out you were pregnant, if you had had the ability to stay in, when would you have finished your PhD?
So probably, I mean, you hope for 5 years, but they can go for seven. So probably about a year ago, or two. Yeah.
Wow. And in between, so you're dealing with morning sickness. It's your first baby. You leave a program that took a lot to get into. What were some of the jobs and things you did in that interim period?
So immediately, you know, I'm having a baby. That's not changing. So we need money. And I immediately start applying to any lab jobs. I mean, so I interviewed for that. It was a job in a lab as a lab manager, and so doing research in a breast cancer lab. I showed up, and all the grad students were like, "Oh, hi, you're expecting?" And I'm like, "Yep." And they're like, "When's baby due?" You know, they didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
But they were super kind, and I ended up getting that job as a lab manager at the cancer center there.
Wow.
And did rotations at hospitals and whatnot.
Amazing.
And all of this before, you know, finally deciding I need to work for myself. And that's when I started the nonprofit, because I was tired of having to ask permission to be a mom. That was the biggest one. As I've mentioned, like my husband was not, you know, that he didn't want to, but he just wasn't around because he was working. And I needed to be the person who took my son to the doctor. If the daycare called, I had to go. That was, you know, what needed to happen. And then I finally realized I need to figure this out for myself, because no one is really giving me the flexibility that I need. And it being the sciences, it is difficult. You know, if you're in the middle of a small animal surgery, for example, which I used to, you know, do stuff like that, you can't just, the phone's not ringing because it's not even in your pocket, because you've gone through three different security, you know, three different doors, three different barriers. Your clothes are in a locker, two chambers away. So you don't know if there's an emergency. You have no way of knowing. To even go pick up your child or whatever, you know.
First year, I mean, just even if nobody gets sick, they're just the routine checkups are every couple of weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you walking me all the way back to your early experiences, because I just think it's so helpful for people to really hear these, that, you know, it's never, it doesn't need to be a straight path, and there are all these different paths, and you've always done things that are amazing, but here you are with your own company that your husband's now joined, and you're helping, empowering other women to forge their own paths. So really, you know, kudos to you. What if you could go back in time to your younger self or to someone else who might be kind of on a bumpy path right now, what advice would you give them?
So I think there's two pieces of advice. The first one is the mistake that I mentioned that I had made, which is not surrounding myself with enough of a support network. Mm. I mean, you don't want to professionally or personally ever think that like, oh, when this terrible thing happens, I'm going to need all these people around me, you know, but you need to have those relationships in place. Whether or not, you know, like you should be finding your group of people, men or women, you know, to have that support, not just for when something bad happens. I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make that, you know, and I don't, you know, for me, I was so consumed with what I was doing, but I should have been going to the, you know, if the graduate students were down the hall for a meeting, just popped in and been like, hey, what are you guys talking about? You know, I was there enough, but I just never thought that I needed an outside network to give me that support. So I think that's number one. So that's professionally, but also personally, I think it's important because motherhood is really tough. Mm-hmm. I know it's really tough to also find mom friends that you gel with. Being a mom is hard in of itself, you know, the daily decision making that you have, you know, am I a bad mom? Should I have not been on my phone right now? Should I just go lay with him? You know, like, mm-hmm. is it bad if I'm watching Real Housewives right now? I mean, there's all of that. I remember that first, you know, 2 years being so like, am I doing the right thing? What am I doing? You know, not so much with the second, but, you know, I think it's really important for first time moms and moms to get together. And I had to start a nonprofit to have a reason to go talk to other moms and like create that kind of thing for myself. So whatever you got to do, you know, get out there and build, you know, surround yourself. And now I get to talk to my, you know, I like say my moms, because it's like, you know, to have this incredible, like, you know, amazing network of moms all over the U.S. and, you know, around the world, that I feel like every, you know, through the newsletter, I share a lot about, you know, my personal life as well as like, you know, stuff, professional stuff, that there's some that I will get a response and that, you know that it's touched somebody or they have advice for me. I love it so much because it was lacking for such a long time, especially when I was a new young, you know, younger mom. So connect.
That's it for this time, but we'll be back next week for another conversation with another inspiring woman. If you could take just a minute to rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to hear these stories. The 43% is produced by me, Claudia Reuter, Cynthia Pimentel, and the whole team at Wonder Media Network. Our executive producer is Jenny Kaplan, and our music is from Martin Wisenberg. You can find the 43% wherever you listen to podcasts and on our website at the43%.com. Thanks again for listening and have an awesome week. I want to tell you about a podcast I recently discovered called Product Hunt Radio. Each week, Ryan Hoover and Abadesi from the Product Hunt team interview the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. They've grilled The Atlantic's Taylor Lawrence on the future of social media and Andreessen Horowitz's Scott Cooper on the future of venture capital. Every Wednesday, they dive into how tech is shaping our future, from remote working to niche online communities to virtual reality. It's an eye-opening take on an industry transforming our daily lives, but rarely in the most transparent way. Go ahead and listen and subscribe to Product Hunt Radio on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or in your favorite podcast app.